From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made back in April when Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg first discussed Facebook's new plan to create a dedicated news tab that would become a showcase for trusted news and journalism. Here's what Zuckerberg said during that April interview. Quote, "One of the things that's really worked over the last year or two is we've launched Facebook Watch for video, where people who weren't getting all the video they wanted in newsfeed could go to a place that's a dedicated space to get video. Because that has started to really grow quickly, we've decided that there really is an opportunity to do something like that with news as well," end quote. But Facebook's reputation as a place for news is awful. Zuckerberg and Facebook have had to repeatedly try to explain how Facebook could be caught so flat-footed to change and opportunism and scams. And could Facebook now become an actual trusted source of news content? Well, this month, several outlets reported on Facebook's first steps in this regard. They're not hiring their own journalists, of course. Facebook has reportedly offered millions of dollars for the rights to put news content on its site. Facebook has been approaching ABC News, The Washington Post, and Bloomberg, among others. Is this a good idea? Haven't we spent the past several years trying to train ourselves not to rely on Facebook or social media as the only place for news content? Is this a better option, or is it a path to more bad decisions? Our guest this hour will debate it, and one of the longest-running critics of Facebook in Rochester is here. It's Mike Johansson. He's a Rochester-based social media strategist. Is that fair? I think it's fair.
Critic's a little harsh, yeah, but sure.
Okay, well, you'll take it.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Thanks for being here, Mike. Also with us is Michael Killian, executive editor for the Democrat and Chronicle and Mid-Atlantic States editor for the USA Today Network. Michael, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Evan. Good to be here.
Good to have you. And Rashad Smith is a publicist, social media manager for WLGZ 105.5 The Beat. And a Facebooker since, what, the beginning? How long have you been in there?
Since 2005, the start of it all.
Oh, the start of it all.
Yeah.
Nice to have you back here. Thanks for being
here. Thanks,
Evan. I joked at Mike Johansson that you've been a longtime critic, but you really have been saying for the last 10 years or so that there have been enough missteps for us to kind of maybe look for other options. Facebook is obviously still a powerhouse. What do you make of these early comments from Zuckerberg on Facebook's changing the way it's trying to collate news?
Well, it's one of two things. It's either a desperate move to fend off some of the likely criticism coming from the FTC and other people are looking into it. Or it might just be another money grab. You know, Facebook's pretty famous for that. Anything that keeps eyeballs there for 5 minutes, 10 minutes longer means more advertising opportunity. And Facebook's revenue from advertising still accounts for, I think, I want to say 39%, something like that. I'd have to look it up. I've got it right here. But of all digital advertising. And that's slowly, slowly going down. So they obviously would like more.
Now, Mike Johansson, of course, has been a journalist in this town for many years himself as well. He's got a wide-ranging background in communication. If you're in the room with Zuckerberg, forget the idea of what they're actually trying to do. If they're actually trying to do this right, what are you telling Mark Zuckerberg right now?
Well, if you're going to do it right, make it so that it's very transparent, that where the news is coming from, that you're paying for it, give links back to the original sources so that people want more information from those news sources. They can go there directly and not have to be sort of, hogtied a little bit and make it difficult to go to these news sources. Do as much as you can to support the real journalism. I mean, money's good, but actual support links and other stuff would be better.
Now, transparent is not the word I usually associate with Facebook or Mark Zuckerberg.
Well, and that's why I said it, because frankly, a lot of things Facebook has been doing since I first got on my bandwagon about hoping it was going to die in about 2008 has been because they do things behind the scenes.
Yes.
And they're not transparent.
Well, we're going to get back to that. And that's obviously such an important theme here, because some of the critics already are looking at this saying, well, how are they choosing which news outlets? How broadly do they need to go here? Michael Killian, I don't know if they've called the USA Today Network. If Facebook calls the USA Today Network, is there going to be a multimillion-dollar deal? Should the USA Today Network take it?
There no doubt would be a discussion. It's a very important discussion to have. And whatever we think about Facebook and its history and its ethics and its transparency, the reality is that most American citizens do not connect on a daily basis with news created by trained professionals. That paper that was on our doorstep every day, decade after decade, is not part of most Americans' lives anymore. And so people say, I get my news from Facebook. Well, Facebook doesn't create news. So who knows what they're looking at or whether they're looking at it at all. So how we connect the public to news is an important civic question for our democracy.
Have they contacted the USA Today Network that you know of?
I have no knowledge of that.
Okay. Do you think they should?
I would say that any discussion should happen, you know, regardless of whether it's USA Today or the New York Times or someone else. How it works, what the details are, frankly, what the financial arrangements are. Facebook and Google have taken the lion's share of advertising in the digital space, advertising that used to belong to local radio, local TV, local newspapers. And so local news is in peril in large part because the revenue sources have dried up.
Rashad, I wanted to get your perspective on this because, you know, I'm trying to get a sense for what people who may be using social on a routine basis think about the idea of getting news off Facebook now. And obviously, when I say news off Facebook, there's different ways that that lands on your radar. But in recent years, has Facebook lost some of its reputation or luster in that regard? What do you think?
I think it depends on who you ask. If you ask millennials who are fresh in college, maybe not. But if you ask someone, 35 plus, who've probably been using Facebook since the founding in 05, probably so. And I think a lot of that has to do with the political climate. Facebook tends to be the most used source for political news. And so when you put that in perspective, and me as a professional in the radio industry and a hip hop radio station, one of the largest and most dominant music genres, you want to make sure that those who are following these stations, where it be black, white, skinny, big, those persons are making sure that they receive the accurate information. What's difficult about it is that those persons are not necessarily, they just want to click. They don't want to identify if the source is accurate. They don't want to further investigate. And so I love this topic because Facebook owes TV, owes news, owes radio that opportunity to ensure that they're doing it right.
Yeah, and Rashad brings up a really interesting point here that I think I don't want to divert entirely into what are the kids using with social media these days, but here's why I think this question matters. Sometimes when we're preparing for conversations on various subjects, the Connections team will get together, have a conversation about, you know, who's going to be on the panel, how important is different representation across different backgrounds. And we thought, well, we need to get, you know, sort of the younger perspective for Facebook. And then we thought, I don't know anymore. Like, Facebook's more for oldsters. You know, like, I don't know if Rashad mentioned freshly out of college, which may now technically be Gen Z. I don't know if that's where right. that cut up. But I don't know how much they probably have accounts, but I don't know if they're using it. What are you using?
So very interesting. I'm also an educator in the Rochester City School District. And a lot of times my students are telling me that I'm old. I just turned 31 August 9th.
that is so harsh. That hurts physically.
And they say that I'm old because I'm using Facebook. They are using more of the interactive social media sites, the Snapchats, the Instagram, in which, you know, we can get into the topic about those mediums using doing what they need to do to ensure that news is accurate.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what they're using.
That's so interesting that it's like a mark of oldness. Oh, you're on Facebook a lot? You must be a little old. You must be 31. That cuts, man. That cuts a little close. Well, that question, though, when it comes to social media, we're going to focus this hour on Facebook because they are still a monster. But Rashad's making an important point here, I think. I mean, when we look at college kids now, high school students, I say kids, I mean, they're adults, students, young adults. I don't know how much, if Facebook is still going to be a player, or is that just the optimistic me thinking, well, eventually Facebook will die?
I think this is really two different discussions, to be honest. I think if you want to get news to people who are 25 and under, Facebook's probably not the place.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's Zuckerberg's game. His game is to keep more eyeballs, 25 and older, on the website for longer. In fact, in 2011, he quite famously said, Facebook will be the internet in the future. He wants you just to go to Facebook and nowhere else.
Is he wrong? He's wrong, right?
Well, of course he's wrong. I mean, we can say that now, like 8 years later, but I think that's still his goal. You know, if he, I don't want to compare him to any former political leaders with really nasty ties, but if he were to write a book about his grand plan, it probably would be called Facebook will be the internet.
Yeah. In a moment, I want to talk to our guests about how broadly we ought to go here in considering what is legitimate news, if Facebook's going to do this. But I want to ask listeners, you know, do you think things have changed in your own life? Have we come out of the infancy of social media? Yes, Facebook, but all social media, in that it became so easy to share things quickly that you could find something that matched your bias. And in a moment, without even reading it beyond the headline, you could share it to everyone you knew. And they could share it to everyone they knew. And there are so many news stories that get shared even today. Are you better about that? And I say better, like, are you more slow to say, well, this headline may, you know, kind of line up with my biases, but I should probably read the article. I don't know if I should share this yet. Are people better about that? Or do you think it's just as sort of toxic and clumsy as it's always been? 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Now, Michael Killian, to the point about what Facebook is trying to do here, how broadly do you go here? They've talked to, as far as we know, ABC News, Washington Post, Bloomberg. Yeah, you know, how wide a net do we need to cast here? What would you tell them?
I would tell them that if this is going to work and work well, local news has to be part of the equation.
Local?
Yes. The national news brands reach a large audience, maybe not as large as they want, but they're on much stronger ground financially than local news. Local news is in peril across our country, as the newly launched New York Times project about the fate of local news demonstrates. But if you're the Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, ABC News, you're in a much better place. You have a lot of revenue, you have a lot of audience. The national brands are concerned about the fake news, you know, the Pope endorsed Donald Trump, which a million people liked on Facebook three or four years ago, right? He didn't, by the way.
Thanks for the clarification.
But the connection that's lacking is local news to local residents. Somebody in Boise will subscribe to the New York Times. They're not going to subscribe to the Democrat and Chronicle, nor will anybody in Rochester subscribe to the Boise, Idaho Statesman. You know, local radio has this challenge. Obviously, local television does as well. How do you sustain local news so you have enough journalists paying attention to City Hall and highway project plans and issues of diversity and inclusion in a place like Rochester if there's not financial support for that? Can this Facebook effort help? We don't know, but is it something that should be considered if it's going to work? I think definitely yes.
Now, you know, you come in obviously with a little self-interest there, but I do too. I don't think communities are going to be, I think we're at real risk if newspapers die. I think we need print, and whatever the form print is, whether it's daily, weekly, all digital, part digital, whatever the case is, I think we're in real peril with that. So maybe listeners are hearing Michael Killian, who is the executive editor for the Democrat and Chronicle, and saying, well, of course he wants Facebook to include local. But I think he's right. The question is, would they see any money in that? I mean, I think to Mike Johansson's point, Mark Zuckerberg's first probably interest is the bottom line.
Yeah, and that's where it gets tricky. You know, for a long time, Facebook and some other social media sites got a certain amount of traffic that was fueled by news reporting, right? I'm not sure how true that is. When I look at my feed since the 2016 election, it's become much more personal. You know, my friends' babies and things of that. I rarely see politics in my feed on my phone anymore. So, you know, I think they're trying to create a comfort zone for all of us. But I do think, you know, the good side of Mark Zuckerberg recognizes the news ecosystem is polluted and struggling, and it's almost like an environmental crisis, right? And so he's trying to find an answer that benefits his company, but ideally benefits that ecosystem and our democracy.
Well, and to that point, I'm very curious, Rashad, do you agree with Michael? I actually do agree with Michael in this. I mean, I'm not on Facebook a ton. I see a little less in the way of political proselytizing than I used to see. I think people are largely becoming aware that it's mostly echo chambers. You're loudly proclaiming something about your political views to a group of people who mostly agree. But then there's always, we also have a small subset of our Facebook friends who have ignored all of those changes, and they're still doing it. Chris Wilford, I love you, my friend. Every day, man, every day. Are we doing it less, you think? Or do you think there's maybe a value? Because in some sense, I'm sort of denigrating Facebook. Is there a value to at least posting and sharing and ranting,
yeah,
and sometimes maybe sharing news that you want other people to read there?
You know, I think an important part of the conversation is also about education, educating the public on really how to identify real news. As I stated before, you know, we just sort of want it at the tip of our fingers to be able to click, etc. But for those millennials, and I speak for the millennials, I fall in that category, for the millennials who are really not picking up newspapers, they are not going to CNN.com, Democrat and Chronicle.com, etc., WXXI, there needs to be a better job at ensuring that we can teach millennials the importance of identifying. So I think to answer the question, Facebook has to do a better job at ensure, you know, we get bombarded with all types of information,
yep.
True, false, fact, fiction. And so I think a big part about that is education. And I think Facebook is stepping in that direction.
Do you agree there? And do you agree with your colleague across the table who said maybe we see a little less of political proselytizing?
Actually, I think we see a lot less, and that has a lot to do with in 2018, Facebook changed its algorithm. And late in 2018, they announced that the algorithm would change to the point where you'd get a lot more personally relevant stuff. Mm-hmm. This was bad news for corporations, brands, and marketers because
yes.
a lot of their stuff just died. But the the personal stuff, stuff you might really be interested in, like I saw a picture today on Facebook of a couple of local media personalities and their two boys that are taking a walk in a park and some guy getting stuck in the rocks. that was Evan, by the way.
That was me. We were in a cave. We were in a limestone cave.
Which shows that the algorithm is actually working very well, because I don't think you and I have commented or noted each other's Facebook in weeks, but somehow that popped up in my feed. So that shows that Facebook's doing a better job of delivering relevant stuff to us. Because I don't participate in political discussions on Facebook, I think that's way buried if it's even there anymore.
But if you were to comment on two or three friends who are posting news stories or political rants of some kind, maybe that would change.
Yeah.
The
yeah,
algorithm probably is created, so you'd get more of it.
Sure.
So that's what Zuckerberg, the game, as you describe it, is to get people to stay on there longer. So they're building these algorithms. They're trying to figure out what Rashad is on there to do, what Michael's on there to do, what Mike Johansson's on there to do, give you more of that. But if you want news, they want to create a collated site for you to get your news from. Maybe I'm wrong, but I just feel like their reputation has been hit so hard that I don't think people are going to think of Facebook as the place for it. Maybe I'm wrong, though. Don in East Rochester first on the phone. Go ahead, Don.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
If Facebook wants to be a news organization, it has become a communications company, and as such, it needs to be regulated by the Federal Communications Commission, just like probably your own station is regulated by them, and all the over-the-air media is regulated by them. If he wants to become a communications company, he has to agree to regulation. Now, when I saw him about a year and a half ago on testifying before Congress, he said, regulation, yes, but the right kind of regulation, meaning that they want to design the regulatory rules. They need to be regulated by the FCC, or they can face antitrust action. But we can't let it go on any longer without them being held accountable to the American public.
Don, thank you. Mike Johansson, regulate them with the FCC. Should there be that kind of oversight?
That's been called for a long time. In fact, one of the challenges is that for a long time, social media platforms have not been, well, a lot of websites are not responsible for the content that goes on their platforms. The 1996, I think it's Federal, I'm trying to get the name right, Federal Communications Decency Act, Section 230, says that people who run a website are not necessarily responsible for stuff posted by other people using that site. I actually would like to see that change. I kind of agree with the caller. Maybe they should be regulated. Maybe the internet, of course, that's a slippery slope. Where do you draw the line? Who does what? Who decides what's right, what's wrong? What about people's inherent biases? You know, it raises a lot of red flags. But again, we've seen what happened in the 2016 election when you just have a free-for-all.
Should they be regulated? Michael Killian?
In a larger picture sense, I'm Switzerland on this. I would say, however, given our current president and some of the saber-rattling he's done with the media being the enemy of the people and going after some of the tech companies, we have to be careful that we don't end up with a tool for propaganda or control or limitation of views in our society.
I think of, because I think of you as young, by the way, Rashad. 31 to me is young.
tell my students
to
that,
your
but
students
thank you.
It's old. And so I think of, you know, younger adults like you, like I not too long ago was, I wonder what people in, I'm going to say our, but really your age cohort think about. Do we think of the internet and do we think of social media behemoths like Facebook as almost like public utilities, that they're going to be there forever, that they should be regulated that way, almost like everything else?
Yeah. So the regulation, I'm not sure. I agree with you, Mike. And, you know, we want to be able to express our opinions. But I think if Facebook wants to take a real effort in ensuring that news is accurate, real, they should maybe connect with, and I think they're taking this approach to connecting with some of these larger mediums, but to make sure that we are accurately working with those mediums. You know, there's a certify button on social media. So if you go to an account of a popular person, a prominent famous person, you'll know that they're real because all of the fake accounts that are out there. So even taking some of those smaller steps and making sure that news that's posted, if they're working with third-party organizations, certify that link. Make sure that it's real. And so, you know, those are some smaller things that can be done, I think, with Facebook. But in terms of regulation and because of the, you know, we want to be able to communicate our opinions and gather feedback from friends. No, I don't think so.
Okay. Bonnie in Rochester next on the phone. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Yeah, hi. I came in the middle of this, but I just don't think that Facebook is capable, for whatever reasons, in replacing the absolutely incredible need for investigative reporting, and ideally, I think even preferably, in the print category. Do we still have a print category?
We do.
Newspaper category. That's because it's, first of all, you have to have people who are who want to be part of a community. So if you work here and you're in the news, you ought to care about what happens here. And some of these issues, like housing, is probably one of the best ones. For years, there was almost very little about housing. Okay, you know, building here and there, but not the huge amount of problems that Rochester and many cities across the country are facing. And it's a fundamental, there's a whole lot of fundamental right justice issue in that subject, more than it's still not covered. And it needs to be covered ongoing because these issues, unfortunately, don't get this better, even when there's been some recent legislation. There's a huge pieces. And following people who've been, excuse my language, screwed by landlords, following that more in depth to get the human, the deeper, because these issues go very deep, really. So I just think that kind of stuff, it takes somebody personally. I mean, sometimes when you call phone, make phone calls, you know, you want information, you see more and more to get people who don't even live in the area, and they don't, what are you talking about? So yep. I feel strongly about this. Okay.
Yeah, Bonnie, that's a series of really important points there. And it dovetails with what Michael Killian was saying earlier, that, you know, obviously he'd like to see if Facebook wants to invest in supporting and you know, spending its dollars to kind of try to collate news, to think about local as well, or at least some version of local. I don't know. I don't know if they see money in it. And frankly, the money thing, it matters. We're not in a pledge drive, so I can be a little bit more direct here and say that I think if you can afford to be a member of your public radio and you're not, if you can afford to subscribe to the Democrat and Chronicle and you're not, I think you're participating in the changing of journalism for the worse. I think about organizations like Open Mic Rochester. They don't exist without people supporting them. If you can afford to support them and you don't, there's so much that I, you know, feel really sort of pent up about the way we think about journalism. Everybody wants it for free. I want it on Facebook. I want this. But I don't want to pay for it. Or they'll talk about, well, the Democrat and Chronicle is not as big as it used to be. Well, there's fewer subscribers. I mean, we have a cause and effect here. Yes. And Michael, I'm going to bat for you because I care.
And we appreciate that.
but I'm fearful that the profitability side is going to make it really hard. And you know, I don't know where we go from there.
Yeah. And again, as a recent New York Times mega project on the fate of local news demonstrates, local news is in peril across our country. We've reached a crisis point. And you get to rural America and exurban America, you're already seeing very few news reporters of any background. And you're seeing all but your largest cities with far fewer people reporting news, telling what's going on. And there's a cost to that in terms of even social cohesion, right? As our nation becomes more diverse, our communities become more diverse, we don't have enough journalists telling that story well. And so people kind of become more tribal, and they're more fear-driven than knowledge-driven. And that's not the society we want to live in.
Especially people who are younger adults. They don't want to pay hardly for anything. I think they've grown up in the internet culture.
Yeah, I'm forced to pay for subscriptions just because of the business. But when I'm clicking away, I want it immediately. I don't want to have to subscribe, nor do I want to sign in. I just want to be able to get that information. You know, I think there's something important to say about this as well. In terms of algorithms, and when you think about the users of Facebook or social media, and, you know, when they're inputting various items in search engines or they're commenting, you know, Facebook has a way of detecting, you know, those who are in the crazy, I'm not going to call it a business, but you think about child pornography, you think about domestic terrorism. When folks are searching those, they can't go to local mediums to search that information and it really be detected. But Facebook, I think, has a way through algorithms to addressing some of those things. So there's valuable pieces to what Facebook can do. And really, I think that you just said this, Mike, that maybe they should not consider hiring journalists, but I would argue differently. If this is the way that news is going for millennials, for those who are older, then maybe Facebook should invest in some sort of journalistic approach.
Sorry.
Yeah, I know. No,
I hear, okay.
I know.
Are they doing a good job of policing the kind of content that Rashad brings up?
No, of course not. But I mean, it's a game of whack-a-mole, isn't it?
I mean, yeah, you know, I mean, that's a hard job.
2,000 things pop up, and they take care of them, and 25,000 more have already popped up. I mean, it's an mission impossible for them. The one thing that I think that you know, when I write my book, How to Save Legacy News Organizations, it would have a lot of tips in it. You're looking at...
Oh, you have a captive audience right here.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah. And you know, 20 years ago, I remember writing a memo to my boss at the time. And it talked of it was like a 10-point plan. I was very, you know, full of myself, and I absolutely knew exactly what needed to happen. And, of course, none of those things did. I mean, back then, traditional media was the Queen Mary crossing the Atlantic. It took, you know, 2 days to turn around, and if that. And so there are just so many things that could be done on a sort of micro level, but a couple of things need to happen on the macro level. And I'm with Rashid in terms of, you know, I don't know where you do it, but I mean, somehow you've got to instill some values in people, whether it's you're teaching philosophy at a younger age or what you're doing, where people understand, you know, ethics and sort of moral correctness and they look into things, they question things, they don't just take it at face value, you know. Mm-hmm. And if you don't get those things right, then I'm afraid we're just sort of into a death spiral of just like it, click it, like it, click it.
Well, Robert writes to us and says, I do not trust this new plan by Facebook, but I believe we need to think bigger than just regulating them. We need to start educating our population, bring back civics in school, reinstate the Fairness Act. If we as a whole are better educated, we'll be able to discern fact from fiction as opposed to having to Snopes everything. You're an educator too.
Yeah.
How much, you know, either media education, media literacy, how much is this being done in the school level now, and how much do you think it ought to be done?
You know, it's critical. The school district is not addressing it accurately. I have a unique role in the district as a social learning specialist, so where I can incorporate some of this information into curriculum. And it's really about the educator. If the educator can go above and beyond to ensure that, yes, I'm following the guidelines of education, but I also want to educate my students on what's important, what impacts them before they step inside of my classroom and when they leave. And 9 times out of 10 of that, before they come into the classroom and when they leave, they're logging into Facebook.
But you think they're not all that educated in sort of the bigger picture of how the media is working?
No, absolutely not. It's self-education. They're getting on there and they're educating themselves, or at least attempting to.
Yeah, it could be scary.
And it's not necessarily working.
You see it that same way?
Yeah, unfortunately, yes.
So when Robert emails, say, bring back civics. A couple of things. I know civics still exists in many places to some degree. I also know if you're a teacher, you feel like, look, I want to do civics. I want to do voter education. I want to do media literacy. I also have to teach to X, Y, and Z tests that we have to do. Mm-hmm. I'm very limited with the free time that I may have. I know that can be difficult, but in terms of media literacy, where should it start in the actual educational curriculum?
Pre-K.
Pre-K.
Yep. You should literally be doing this, and my daughter out there who may or may not be listening will probably cringe when I say this. I used to ask her all the time, where did you hear that? How reliable is that source? You know, as an old news guy, that was important to me. And I think she has a much better critical thinking approach than a lot of her peers. How credible is that source? What does that actually mean?
Wow. Before I turn to Michael Killian, I'll just say Mike's comment there reminds me of one of my favorite, I don't know what he is other than just a citizen who takes video of himself talking to other citizens in a park. And he's not aggressive. He's very kind. He's very soft-spoken. He only talks to people who really want to talk. And he talks about belief in God. His name is Anthony Magnabosco. But he does it in a way that he doesn't try to challenge them. As an atheist, he doesn't try to get them to stop believing in God. He tries to get them to see, well, okay, so let's talk about why you believe that and where that goes back to, or what's the evidence underpinning it, and how confident are you in that belief? You can take his approach, and he's going to be on the program soon, talking about the way we form beliefs, and apply it to anything, politics, ideas on policy, you know, who you like and don't like in terms of the political sphere. Why do you think what they're saying is true or not true, or what underpins your belief here and there? And the reason I want him on is I think his Socratic approach is so much better than most of what I see. I'm not sure kids are learning this kind of stuff. That's why I think what he's doing shouldn't be that revolutionary. But I'm like, wow, I look at this guy and I go, oh, man, I want to be more like that. Why can't we learn this?
Well, good point. In fact, I just finished reading Harari's book, Sapiens, A Short History of Humankind. And the main thesis in that book is that Homo sapiens succeeded because we're storytellers and we like myths. When you think about it, our whole setup, we're based on myths. Our laws, you know, some people are better than others. Politics, religion, you can trace it all back to our ability to create myths.
Okay, we're going in a very interesting direction. Media literacy, what do you want to see in the schools?
We need to start very early, as Mike says, and we have to accept a reality that we are 20, 30 years into the internet age. Print newspapers are not something that most working age people look at very often. And so all of the literacy, the media literacy that built around print newspapers in the 20th century, around evening TV news broadcasts, around radio news broadcasts, has faded. And people are bombarded with information every moment of every day on their phones. And they don't necessarily have a framework for processing it, for valuing it. The floodgates have opened. You know, I think the DNC used to be this glass of water right here. Now, you pour it into an ocean, right? And it's lost in that ocean of information. So we owe it to the public and to our society to work on helping people swim in that ocean, navigate it, understand it, not drown in it. I worked with Mary Miller at the New York News Publishers Association in Albany, and she came to Rochester to do a media literacy session a couple months ago. And she had example after example of how the public has misconstrued information because media literacy has fallen so far so quickly. And it's much like smoking and vaping. Every new generation has to be exposed to this. Just because my mom and myself understand news and trusted news sources and that sort of thing doesn't mean that my children will or their children.
Our listeners have a lot more to say after our only break of the hour. We're talking about Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg's ideas about creating essentially a new approach to journalism and news via Facebook. Now, they're not hiring journalists and essentially creating or reporting the news themselves. They're going to try to collate it and make Facebook a place that you can go to get reliable news. To state the obvious, they've had issues with that in the past. Is this approach a good one, a sound one? Will it work? And what do we need to know, more broadly speaking, about their approach? Is it transparent enough? This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, joined by Michael Killian, the executive editor for the Democrat and Chronicle and the Mid-Atlantic States editor for the USA Today Network. Mike Johansson is a Rochester-based social media strategist. Rashad Smith is a publicist and a social media manager for WLGZ, 105.5 FM, The Beat. And on the phone with us next is Chris in Geneva. Go ahead, Chris.
Hi, Evan. My name is Chris Lav, and I was the former city editor of the Times Union for some years, but I went on to St. Petersburg and then out to be senior editor of the San Diego Union until a few years ago. Since I left the newspaper industry, I've been working sort of on my own in communities to come up with a way of maybe taking journalism away from the corporate model that generates profits for a single owner and maybe giving it a place in the community, shepherded. I call it shepherded journalism. If you look at GenevaNow.com or LaMesaToday.com, La Mesa, I was living in California when I was in San Diego, and I created a space shepherded by a journalist, but contributed, the content largely contributed from the community. And I think that there's a way, perhaps with academia, and I know out in San Diego they've been working with universities, to try and give a different venue for shepherded, juried information that's shared by the community to the wider community. And I think there's ways that when you look down the line, and I'm a big, you know, I was a Gannett employee, and I'm a big supporter of newspapers, including the Finger Lakes Times, that now that I'm living in Geneva. But I think that we have to start looking beyond the model of the single downtown man with the presses or the TV station, and start looking at what kind of spaces we can create with separated local news that people can trust. And you build your reputation just as the newspapers did over the years by doing that. So if you look at Geneva Now, which I'm just starting up in Geneva Now, and I'm going to be working with college kids and local publicists and others to bring a steady flow of good juried news to the community. But there's very little cost involved, and it's free.
But you can't pay people much to do it, though. It sounds like there's not a lot of cost involved, and it's free. Those aren't journalists making a living, I assume.
Not yet. No, but I can tell you that out in San Diego, when I was running La Mesa, and La Mesa Today still exists. I'm living in New York, maintaining the site out there through local contributions. During election time, the politicians pay extremely well. To use the database that we generate to get the message out. I generated $10,000 of income in just prior to the last elections out in La Mesa, selling space and time to the average. You know, there is a demand there. I haven't fully developed it, and I don't know whether you're ever going to get back to a model where people are making $150,000 a year to be the curator of arts news in a community like that. Well, but I think that there may be other ways of looking at information and trusted information and public service without saying that it has to generate enough income everywhere to support the executive salaries that it has in the past, the reporter salaries.
All right. Well, Chris, let me just jump in and let our guests respond. I'll start with Michael Killian. What do you think?
Certainly the nonprofit model is rising in some communities. When I've been up in Burlington, Vermont, VT Digger is an excellent nonprofit source of news funded by foundations and such. But that is not an answer across 50 states and all the communities that are out there. And at some point, the best journalists are those who have been in the business for a while. Each passing year, you learn that much more about how the world works and how to convey it clearly and accurately to the public. And if the salaries are low or non-existent or relying on college kids, that's not sustainable in terms of doing the level of journalism that a Rochester, New York needs, and maybe over time a Geneva, New York, although I certainly wish that caller well.
Okay. Yeah,
you know, Evan, you mentioned earlier Open Mic Rochester, yeah. Local publication. Hey, Tiana, who's the editor-in-chief at Open Mic. And by no way would I ever approach Tiana with this nonprofit, approach to news. And I get it. We have these public access channels in which they do provide that. But we're making a living off of this thing. And
we're trying to.
And it's very difficult. And, you know, I don't know how willing professionals are who have invested thousands of dollars and years for experience, how willing they will be to say, yeah, let's just cover the news because we know it's the good thing to do. No, we need to make a substantial living of this thing.
Yeah, and I do think, correct me if I'm wrong, Michael Killian, what you're referencing at in Vermont, what was the Vermont?
V.T. Dicker.
V.T. Dicker. But when we talk about nonprofit news, the goal is there's going to be foundations or some source of a funding in which people can still make a living but not rely on just subscribers or clicks or ads or whatever. It sounds like in this case, this community trust model really is a can't really pay anybody anything right now. And that's not nonprofit. That's not for profit. That's no money. And, you know, that's to me, and I'm not at all denigrating Chris's call. I think what he's trying to do is build something, build it from the ground up, build trust, establish trust. Mostly I'm just sort of depressed that that's where we are. That's kind of, yeah. But I do appreciate the approach and the call there. Mike Johansson, you want to weigh in on that?
Well, I was going to say, I mean, you know, the bottom line is you still get what you pay for. And this to me seems like going back to, and I may be getting the dates wrong, my knowledge of American newspapering history may not be entirely accurate, but I know in New Zealand in the very late 18th century, early 19th century, newspapers were essentially an editor, publisher, guy with a printing press, who relied on stringers and volunteers out there to give him the news. And he, you know, the one guy who was making money off it was the guy who could just be the editor, essentially. And I could see this working in a not-for-profit. You know, if I were running a paper, you know, and I had a newsroom of 20 people, I don't know that I'd have too many of them being reporters anymore. I think I'd have them be editors and producers. And then I'd start to foster a good crew of people who I might pay as freelancers, people who may not pay at all, but trust. I remember back when I started at the DNC a long time ago, May of 88, we used to have stringers all over the Finger Lakes. And on an election night.
You were born in May of 88.
I was actually born in August of 88.
Okay. So, I just had to do that. I did a little math in my head. Go ahead, Mike Johansson.
So people tell you, you're an old guy. My students, when they start in class on Monday, they look at me. I'm as old as some of them have grandparents my age.
Right.
Which is terrifying, but yes.
But I didn't mean to interrupt, but when you talk about, you know, 20 years ago when you sent your ideas and you said, you kind of joked you're all full of yourself, but you were looking ahead to the future of an industry. How much of what was on that list do you look back and say, well, I had some pretty good ideas there?
Yeah, I'd say 8 of the 10 were all doable and would have made a difference. 2 of them were just really out there. I'll be honest.
Pick 2 or 3 that could have been done then or maybe could still be done now.
One of them would have been to get into the social media web spaces and be much more active and be like a hub for news. Like, you know, have someone whose job it is to be like the community outreach person, but they're in social, they're in the web. That's where they live. That's where they interact. They become both a source and a distributor of news and information.
Okay, another?
Another, off the top of my head.
Should have brought your list.
Yeah, I really should have. Well, back then, so it's the start of the internet age. One of the things I suggested was targeting ads to people's interests. Now, of course, this went way, way further than I could even have imagined at the time, but I'm kind of horrified at when I go to a lot of news sites now and I get an ad for a guy who's a roofer. I have no interest in a roofer right now. Why am I seeing this ad? And that's the kind of thing that drives people away from your news site. You know, and I get it that it's not cheap to have really highly targeted ads, but there is software out there now that makes this so much easier.
Before I get back to the phone, I've got to say, Mike Johansson, aren't you the guy who's been on this program saying the fact that Facebook knows how to algorithmically target you for ads says that they've got a lot more information on your private ideas, thoughts, communications than you want them to have?
Sure, but I'm also the guy that has said, one way or another, you have to pay for what you get on the web. You either pay with money or you pay with information. You, one way or the other. You know, it's that famous cartoon I think you and I have seen with the pigs in the barn. You know, isn't it great? We get all the free food and there's no real cost to it. Yeah, well, guess what happens to the pigs, you know?
They become the food.
Exactly.
Yes, I know. Okay, well, look, I don't know that we're necessarily going back to where we were 20 years ago, but I don't think we just have to accept. I think we can have these kind of conversations that at least allow more education. That's why my optimism is that we've come out of the infancy of social, of mobile news acquisitions. I was the guy in 2007 who said on the morning news one day, I'm like, no one wants a computer on a phone. They want a phone to be a phone.
Yeah.
I was making no decisions for any big companies at the time. But I think we've come out of the infancy there. I think we have. A couple more comments from listeners. I want to read a comment from Alice in Rochester who said, the guests have said that there are fewer political postings on Facebook or news shared in that way. Is that because there is less Russian involvement? Alice, I don't want to lampoon a comment like that because I think you're being serious, and I know that there has definitely been a lot of influence coming from Russia, from people who want to essentially mess with our own public debate. But I don't know. What did you say to Alice there?
I would say there's not less of it. You might just be Facebook might be doing a better job of getting rid of some of those people.
Well, let's hope so, because it's not like, well, we don't know all the sources that go to Russia or otherwise of people who want to create content that is solely designed to kind of mess with you, but they're still going to try. I mean, there's certainly no reason for them to think that, to be any less emboldened. Fair?
Oh yeah, and I would say that the U.S. military cyber command probably has its hands more than full with dealing with the various threats on the internet these days.
Are you more optimistic about that, that what you're seeing, Rashada, when you see, for example, I'm thinking of the kinds of things that happened in 2016. You would have events in a community basically created. People would, and I think, I say people, I'm not sure it was always people, but it would be like a quote-unquote pro-life rally planted right next to quote-unquote a pro-choice rally just to create conflict in spaces and to create the kind of turmoil and antagonism. And what we found out over time was a lot of this was created by sometimes foreign sources, but also not local actors, sometimes not human actors, just designed to get us turned on each other or amping up the noise. Do you feel like we have less of that? Do you feel better about what you see on social these days?
I think I feel a little better because I think that now people are aware that a lot that's out there is malarkey. And so I want to believe that people are taking this approach on trying to determine what's real and what's fake. There was a hip hop song that says by Dragon says, who's phony and who's fake? That's the type of people I hate. We won't go into the lyrics. But I think that's still happening, you know, where we want to be able to create these spaces, these conversations. You know, conflict is always in the middle of that. And I think that as folks who want to express our First Amendment right, it very well should be. It very well should be. Doing a better job at is social media doing a better job at, you know, clearing that out? Maybe not. It's still there.
Now, Gary says, could the famous Boston Catholic Church sex abuse scandal have ever been uncovered by freelancers? Michael Killian.
Highly unlikely. The Boston Globe Spotlight team was a team of highly trained investigative journalists and editors of the highest caliber, including Marty Baron, who's at the Washington Post now. If you've seen the movie Spotlight, you know, that's a pretty accurate representation of the digging they had to do and all the struggles they faced. In the end, you need trained professionals who are paid what they're worth to deliver the news so that our democracy can thrive.
And our society can be better. I mean, there's no question. That was a very interesting comment from Gary. And Michael, different Michael, writes to us to say, with the downsizing of the Democrat and Chronicle, among others, one of my biggest concerns is who will be doing investigative reporting of corrupt politicians and business people. Thank goodness we still have great reporters writing for print in this town, whether it's at, yes, our colleagues at City, but also the Democrat and Chronicle. But Michael's worried that do we have enough?
It's all how you use the journalists you have. We have to make every shot count when we decide what stories we're pursuing, and that means which ones we're not. And so we're much less the news of record covering every municipal meeting and much more homing in on issues like the Child Victims Act, right? And Steve Orr and his colleagues did some wonderful work on that last week and the weeks leading up to it, and there's more work to come in that area and many others. So we've got to pick our shots, and then we've got to deliver for this community.
All right, Mike Johansson.
Can I just weigh on? There's one thing I wanted to say about that is that it's tough if you're a news consumer because, in a sense, for those of us who are around in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s, we were at the peak. We were at the grand buffet of great news. And all of a sudden, we're not willing to pay for it, and we're being told we're going to have to take a, you know, no, not to denigrate it, but like a Denny's breakfast platter. You know, that's what we're looking at. That's the reality. And unfortunately, unless we start, we're willing to pay for the grand buffet, we're going to get the Denny's breakfast platter.
Yeah, we want the breakfast. We want to pay for the breakfast platter, but get the grand buffet. That it does not work that way.
Right.
Is this Facebook gambit going to work? Give me a prediction. What's going to happen here?
Define work.
They're going to do it, I assume.
I assume they're going to do it, and I'm wondering if it's going to be sort of like their foray into what was it, Newswire back in 2014, 2015, that lasted maybe 2 years, didn't get a lot of traction, and they killed it.
What's the worst-case scenario?
The worst-case scenario is that they do it and do it badly. They're not transparent. They're focusing on certain types of stories, and they can be accused of bias.
That seems likely. Mike Johansson is a Rochester-based social media strategist. Been calling on for the possible death of Facebook for a long time now. If you keep doing it, eventually it'll happen.
Hopefully I'm still alive.
Thank you for being here. Rashad Smith is a publicist, social media manager for 105.5 FM The Beat, and also an educator in the Rochester City School District.
Yes, and we have to make this work. It has to work. We have no choice but to make it work.
I want to believe that that's true. Thank you for being here. Michael Killian, executive editor for the Democrat and Chronicle. Appreciate you and the work that your colleagues and employees do there. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Evan, and what Rashad said.
It has to work. Short break, more connections coming up.